Hi, everybody. My name is Anthony, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Anthony.
It's a real honor to be out here tonight. I've been coming to this meeting for a little while now. I live in Warminster, so it's a little bit of a drive, but I've always very much enjoyed this, so it's an honor to be here, and thank you for having me out. So my story, I grew up in Warminster. I still live in Warminster. I've always been in Warminster. Had a very normal family at the time, it seemed. It's funny looking back now because now, like, my family's a little messed up. But at the time, like, I grew up, it was me, my mom, dad, sister. We had a dog. Like, everything was cool. And I grew up very normally, you know what I mean? I never really felt, like, disconnected from other people at school. And, you know, everything was okay for a while. And then it was age 15. First time I experienced alcohol, we had had a family party at my house, and my parents had gone to bed, everybody had left, and outside on the deck, there was just coolers of alcohol out there, you know, beer, and there was like iced tea coolers. So I went out, and I was grabbing a couple because everybody was sleeping, nobody knew, and I felt the effect, and it felt good. And at the time, you know, I was just chilling downstairs on the computer. If anybody remembers AOL Instant Messenger, I was on that. I had like four conversations going. I was killing it. Felt like the man. And everything was good. You know what I mean? And it felt great. And nothing crazy happened. I drank, felt the buzz of it, and I went to bed. So a few weeks later, after school one day, my friend Kyle had come over. I was like, hey, man, I'm going to drink some vodka because that's what I want to do because I tried it the other night. So I did that. Again, nothing bad. So now, I was ready, you know what I mean? I was really ready to get the alcohol in my system. So it was the first time I decided I had somebody's brother, a friend of mine's brother who was older, give me a bottle of this watermelon vodka. And I remember I started drinking it, and there was like a bunch of us there that were supposed to be splitting it, but like I started chugging it because I started feeling the effect, and I liked it, and I wanted more, and I started chugging it. And before I knew it, like, I messed up. Like, I was in bad shape. And the last thing I remember, I was trying to grab my friend's shirt and tell him to help me, but I couldn't talk and I couldn't walk. And next thing I know, I'm waking up in Warminster Hospital. And, like, my mom's crying. She's telling me how she thought I was going to die last night. And the nurses are all around. I had alcohol poisoning. And, like, I was only 15. So, you know, it was, like, kind of my first experience, like, really getting drunk. And, like, it wasn't a very good experience, you know what I mean? And so I knew I liked when I felt altered, you know what I mean? I knew I liked that. I just thought, all right, young, stupid, I messed up. I didn't know how to do it right. So in hindsight, that probably should have been like a good indication of like what was to come. But I didn't take it as such. I just kind of took it like, you know, I messed up once on that. So I kind of laid low for a little while because I got arrested for it. Had to go do programs and in Warminster, like whatever the juvenile thing was, some classes and stuff. And, I did. I kind of laid low for, like, a while there. And then when I was, like, 16, 17, getting a little older, we could all start driving and everything like that. I started drinking. I was smoking pot, but mostly, like, I liked to drink. Like, that was, like, something that I liked to do. I felt, like, very free. I felt like I could talk to people better. And, I just felt like when we were at a party, I felt, like, very okay. You know what I mean? At the time, I didn't realize I was really living in fear. I think looking back, I spent, like, most of my life in fear, and alcohol took that away for me. But at the time, like, I didn't really draw that conclusion together. So I just knew that, like, I felt okay when I was drunk. And through high school, I drank and partied every weekend at least, you know what I mean? And I do remember thinking that I drink differently from other people, and I like to get wasted. But the thing was, like, to me, it was a real ego booster. Like, I felt cool, you know? And I felt like because I could drink so much or because I was always just down to do whatever, it boosted my ego. It made me feel like better than other people that wouldn't. When I was 17, I remember the first time somebody called me an alcoholic. It was my friend's mom. And I was like, what? Like, are you out of your mind? Like, I'm just having fun. You know what I mean? And it was. I was having fun. In the beginning, back then, I was having a lot of fun with it. And I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? We had a good time partying and stuff. And then I noticed it, like, started to become a little bit of a problem. Like, it was becoming a problem. Like, I would embarrass myself when I was out. And me and my girlfriend, we would fight constantly. And we'd be nonstop going at it and making, like, public displays of, like, yelling and screaming and all that embarrassing stuff that comes with me when I get drunk in front of other people, you know? So then, like, after that, after, like, this, you know, this kept happening for a while. Eventually, I went to college, and, like, my mom had, like, wrote a letter to this university. I wasn't getting accepted anywhere because I did nothing in high school. My mom had written this letter, like, begging them to let me in. I got into, like, this sub-campus out at this other college, and I got out there. My parents paid to, like, send me out there. All I did was drink, like, while I was there. And I remember I went to school for about a week or so, and I skipped one class, and, like, nothing happened. Like, they don't call your mom. Like, nobody's calling home. Nobody's, like, asking where you were. I didn't go back to class for 2 weeks, and then showed back up and was like, hey, can I get all the assignments I missed? And they were like, no. So my college career lasted about 2.5 months, and I was back home. And then, excuse me one second. And then from there, I got a full-time job. And I remember I had to work third shift. I guess it was second shift. I worked 3 to 11:30 p.m. I was 19. And I used to get this kid. I would, like, come home from work at, like, 12 o'clock at night. I like to drink Hurricane 40s. That was, like, my drink of choice because they were, like, $5 for, like, 2 of them. And I'd come home with, like, I still had them, like, the brown paper bag, and I'd be sitting there, like, watching TV, drinking. I felt like a real, like, distinguished blue-collared old man, you know what I mean? Like, coming home from a long day of work, drinking my Hurricane on the couch. And, yeah. So, I did that for a while. Then I started getting in trouble. So I got arrested then. I'd gotten arrested in high school for, like, pot or something. And then I crashed a car drunk, and I totaled this car. You have to understand, with my parents, it was like, it'd be okay to drink. Then I would get in trouble, and, like, things would get really tight. Like, I'd be, like, under, like, they'd be watching me nonstop like a hawk. Then, like, time would go by and things would loosen up, and then I'd screw up again. Like, that was, like, kind of how it went. It was like a rubber band effect at the house. And so I totaled this car, and honest to God, for totaling a car drunk at, like, I think I was, like, 20 or whatever, everything, like, blew over real easy with them. You know what I mean? Like, I was still out doing my thing. Everything was cool. Then one night we went to, I remember this because we, like, had to go to New Jersey. We just had to go. Like, I remember a kid in the neighborhood had the house open to himself. His parents were away, but, like, I had to go to Jersey to go to the Shore House. I remember people were drinking in the car, and I was driving. And, like, I was crawling out of my skin because I couldn't drink. I remember I couldn't stand it to the point where I, like, halfway down, like, pulled over and was like, one of you have to drive. I can't do it. And I started drinking in the back seat. We go down to Jersey. We get there. I was stealing beef jerky from a Sunoco. And at the time, I was, like, a real gangster, so I had, like, these capris on. I tried stuffing it down my pants, and they fell right out. I got arrested, and I spent the night in this Jersey holding cell. They let me out at 7 a.m. They let me out, and I didn't know where I was, but I had to walk. I walked back to the house, and I opened up the door. Everybody was sleeping, and the first thing I did, I started mixing, like, rum and coke, 7 a.m. So I'm drinking that. I got drunk all over again. I fall asleep. Then nobody wanted to pay for beach passes because they were $8 a piece. And, like, all the fines I was about to pay in the next couple years over this, like, $8 would have been nothing. I fall asleep. Somebody else is driving my car. I wake up to yell, "Aunt, we're getting pulled over." And it was just a mess, dude. We were drunk. There was, like, my one friend had a gun in the car that was unregistered, and all kinds of stuff were in the car. And my mom had to come get me. Pick me up from there. So this time, like, my mom was, like, very upset at this point, as you could imagine. So she drove me back down there. I ended up rear-ending her because I was following her. It was a bad time in my life right now. It was bad. So my parents, that's what was, like, they've sent me to this outpatient rehab program, and I'm absolutely, you know, going to keep it respectful to AA. I'm just going to, like, a little asterisk here. When they sent me to this program, I couldn't really drink or smoke weed anymore. I found another drug that I also liked, and from there on, that kind of took off. But I'm, you know, I definitely had a problem with alcohol the whole time, and I'm going to keep it to that. So they sent me in there, and at this point, I guess I was still, like, 20, 21, I don't know. But my life was falling apart, you know what I mean? Like, there were so many times that, like, I always think back on my addiction and my alcoholism, and I'd be at the table, and my family's, like, surrounding me, and my dad's, like, standing there with this very concerned look on his face. My mom's crying. My sister's somewhere around. I can hear her crying, and they're asking me, like, why do you keep doing this? And I look them dead in their eye and tell them, like, I don't know. And they don't want to hear that, but it's honestly the truest thing I've said to them in probably the last 7 or 8 years. You know what I mean? Because I don't know. At this point, I don't know. The consequences are all catching up, and I can't stop. You know what I mean? I can't stop. Which was further proved eventually. Also, just keep in mind, like, at this time, like, I'm really, like, living like a loser. You know what I mean? Like, I maintained my job because they didn't know. My job was, like, go to hospitals and, like, change out the needle boxes at the time. And so I didn't really have, like, a boss watching me. So, like, there was times I just overslept through work, but nobody knew. You know what I mean? So that's how I maintained that job. And, like, everything I'm doing is just falling apart. You know, I have, like, no good relationships. None of my friends talk to me anymore. And nothing good is happening right now. And then, to top it off, like, my girlfriend at the time tells me she's pregnant. And I was like, damn, like, this isn't, you know, ideal. But, so she's pregnant. And I'm, like, telling myself, like, all right, man, like, you got to get it together. You know what I mean? Like, the kid's coming. And I'd always wanted to be a good father. I always wanted to be a father. I was 21. I didn't really, like, plan on being a father now. But, like, you know what I mean? I kind of wanted to step up. Like, my dad was a good dad to me. And, like, so I knew what it looked like. And I kind of wanted to carry that on and pass that along. It was something like I'd always been kind of looking forward to. But I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop drinking. Like, I just couldn't. You know what I mean? As much as I wanted to and, like, my willpower and, like, what I wanted to do, like, didn't matter. Like, I couldn't. And I remember having this, like, I just remember vividly having this, like, glimpse of, like, reality and, like, what was actually happening in my life. I was laying in my bed, and I was so scared. And I realized, like, I have a baby on the way. I have no money. I have, like, nothing going on positive in my life. And I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. You know what I mean? It was just, and it was kind of one of those moments then. I got them every once in a while because, you know, when you're out there, like, just drinking and running, it's kind of easy to get lost up in it. But every once in a while, and this is one of those moments where it just kind of catches up and I just think, like, what happened to me? You know what I mean? Like, how did it become this? Like, this wasn't how I ever saw my life going, and it kind of just stuck in it. And so I keep drinking, and at the same time, I'm like, my son's mother, she's an alcoholic too, and I couldn't stop bringing it around her, you know what I mean, to the point where, like, I was giving my pregnant girlfriend alcohol because I couldn't stop bringing it around her. And then eventually she's like, you know, I want to drink too. I was like, all right, whatever. So baby comes. So then the baby's born, and this time, like, I, like, swore up and down, like, this is it. I am done. I wasn't done yet. I continued to keep drinking and cause more problems. Me and her weren't getting along at all. So then I was back in treatment for the second time, and I just turned 22. I turned 22, and my son was born 4 days later, so I was pretty young. And, you know, thank God at that rehab, something did kind of set in. Like, the biggest thing I really walked away with was that, like, I need to stop drinking, because there was a long time I thought, like, I can kind of do A, B, and C drugs or alcohol, but can't do X, you know what I mean? And I kind of realized, like, I need to give it all up, because it's all a problem, and once something starts, like, it's right back to it, you know? I can't control my drinking. I still don't really know, like, why I can't control it. It doesn't really make sense to me. It just seems like, all right, you're, like, the unlucky one that can't drink, you know? And so I get out of that treatment center, and I came in and I checked out AA, and I was, like, incredibly immature at the time. And I saw AA, and it was, like, a lot of older guys that I saw in the meetings I was going to around me, because one of my friends had been sober for a little while now. And then so I went and I checked out the other fellowship, and it just seemed like a younger crowd and stuff. And so I went over there, you know what I mean? And That's where I got started. And the thing was, just like anything else in life, you kind of get out what you put in. And I didn't want to recover. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to be cool. And I wanted to go to the gym. And I wanted to get girls. And I, like, got to the gym and I got some girls. And then I got drunk. You know what I mean? Like, as could be expected in hindsight. And so I got in this relationship that, like, you know, like, I wanted this hot girlfriend so bad, I finally got one, and then I didn't know what the hell to do with it, you know what I mean? I, like, lost my mind, and ruined the relationship, messed her up, definitely. That was a hard amends to make eventually. And, so we got drunk together twice, and then we broke up, and then I was sad for a long, long time, and I was just kind of clinging to, like, you know, I just kind of stayed around there. And at this time, I had met, like, some great friends I still have today. And one of my friends, he was getting drunk, too. He kept relapsing as well. And so, like, I got some time clean, and then he relapsed again. And at some point, I was kind of like, all right, dude, like, get your stuff together. You know what I mean? Like, and he couldn't get it. Like, you know what I mean? The rest of us could at least get some time. Like, he just, like, couldn't seem to get it. And eventually, he ends up, like, going to jail for a short period, and then they sent him to a recovery house down in Croydon, and he went down there, and I kind of stopped talking to him. Like, I didn't mean to, like, be a jerk, but like I said, it was kind of like, get your shit together and then come back, you know what I mean? Because he would, like I said, he just couldn't get it, you know, he was struggling, and I was not filled with love and tolerance at the time. So, he goes down there. I keep kind of doing my thing, and then eventually it all catches up to me. Because, see, what I had done in that other fellowship was I kind of manipulated myself to where I wanted to be. I would only go to my home group. It was every Tuesday night. That's all I would do. It's the only thing I really did was show up there. And I got cool with, like, all the people that were in there. So, like, all, like, the old heads that were in there, I was kind of, like, boys with them. And, like, anybody that had some time. So, like, they wouldn't really, like, call me on my stuff and, like, none of the newcomers were going to either, so, like, I was kind of just chilling there, you know what I mean? And it was, like, I got, like, exactly what I wanted and was completely miserable. And, like, I wasn't getting anywhere, you know? Like, I was still miserable. I wasn't getting any relief. And so then that friend of mine that had gone down to Croydon, he's actually one of my other best friends, they're brothers, and I start hearing about the stuff he's talking about, and he's talking about God, and he's talking, like, very positively, but very, like, everything was, like, very black and white. Like, either God's everything or he's nothing. You know what I mean? I never really heard stuff like this. And I'm not saying it wasn't said. Maybe I wasn't listening or didn't care, but it all, like, made very good sense to me. And his brother eventually comes into AA, and I start talking to him, and he's kind of giving me, like, you know, he's, like, the messenger for me of what he's learning over in AA and about the big book, and, like, it just made a lot of sense to me, and, like, where I was, man, I was, like, so miserable, I needed to change something, you know, because I knew, like, I didn't want to get drunk again. Like, at this point, I'd actually had, like, you know, probably about 3 years sober, and, you know, I felt like I wasn't getting the benefits that I saw other people, like, I didn't have, like, an air of peace and serenity that I see people in the rooms with, you know, and I wanted that. It's very attractive to me. It still is. When I see somebody who's very serene and seems okay with themselves and in their skin, like, it's very attractive. And so I decided to go into AA. I was like, you know, I'm going to make a switch. I come over to AA, and funniest thing, I asked that kid to sponsor me, the one that I told, like, get your shit together and come back. I asked him to sponsor me, you know? And I always thought that was, like, such a great story. And we went through the steps, and he took me through the book, and you know, when we got to, like, look at everything, and especially, like, when we did that fourth step, and I had pages and pages of stuff on there, and he told me, like, think of this as, like, poison that you're carrying around with you every day, and, you know, no wonder you're feeling so sick, you know what I mean? So, I went through that, and it was such a great experience, and taking that hour, which I had never heard of, you know, it felt, like, very close to God. Like, the next day, I felt, like, that peace and serenity that I've been chasing, and as I've done, like, pretty much with everything in my life, but especially in recovery, I get a certain sense of relief, and all of a sudden, I, like, take my foot off the gas. Like, I've done it time and time again. And, like, basically, I wait till I'm at a level zero of happiness, and once I get to a two, I'm like, all right, I'm good, you know what I mean? I ease up on what got me there. And I've been trying to, like, it's a huge defect, I guess, that I have. Like, I get very complacent and then wait till it hits emergency status again, you know. And for a long time, for about better part of, you know, 6 months to a year, I got by. Like, I had, like, a pretty good routine going. Like, I just got up, went to the gym, went to work, went home, took care of my son when it was my days to have him, and, you know, went to bed. And that's all I did. So basically, I was getting by on just because, like, nothing was, like, bad. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't, like, living life to its fullest, and I wasn't super happy, but I was just living in neutrality, basically. And then until eventually that got exposed, you know, something happened. It was actually that girl that I told you I was all sad about breaking up. It was, like, years later, I bumped into her. We, like, hung out. I was, like, thinking we were going to get back together. We were at the same wedding. We hung out after, had a great conversation, chilled for hours, and I swore I was going to hear from her again, and I didn't. And when I didn't, I realized, like, the absence of God in my life, because I had, like, it just felt like I had nothing. I was in, like, despair. And in being so, I made a couple phone calls, and I called my friend Bill. I called his sponsor, Ben, and I let him know, like, everything that was going on, and Ben gave me, like, a lot of good stuff, and I really, like, I wanted Ben to sponsor me, is what I really wanted, and he was like, I'm sponsoring too many guys, but I have two people, and I was, like, disappointed, because, like, I'm not, like, one to really just open up to, like, another guy, you know what I mean? It's not that easy for me to open up and just let them know, like, exactly all my emotions and how I'm feeling sad and all that stuff, but he was like, I got two guys that, and I'll have one of them give you a call, see what their situation is and what they're doing. I think they'd be really good for you. The one guy's name was, like, George, and the other one was Patrick. And I just, for some reason, I didn't know either one at all, but I really wanted George. And then I get a phone call. I get a phone call, and it's like, hey, it's Patrick. And I was like, of course it is. You know what I mean? Of course it is. And it's funny because, once again, like, God basically did for me what I could never possibly see coming. He gave me, like, the perfect sponsor. The reason, also, just to backtrack real quick, with Matt, we became, like, super close again. So it just wasn't working out. You know what I mean? We're, like, boys again, hanging out. So I need a new sponsor. So now I got this guy, Patrick. And Pat ends up being, like, the perfect sponsor. Like, if you asked me to create a sponsor for me, I wouldn't have done such a good job. You know what I mean? He's very spiritual, very, like, knowledgeable of the steps and stuff like that, kind and all that, but he's also, like, a little bit crazy, so he, like, gets, like, where I'm coming from. You know what I mean? He's, like, very relatable. And so me and him, you know, we venture back through the steps, and it's funny because, again, like I said, like, I didn't want Pat, and then Pat ends up being, we go through, and he's, like, taught me so much stuff about, like, in the book, like, things like that I missed the first time through or wasn't ready to understand or take in. And as we're going through it, you know, big thing that was highlighted, because, you know, like, I think the book says, like, resentment's the number one offender for alcoholics and takes more people out. And it wasn't too long ago, we went over the four step again, and these resentments came up. And it was funny because I'm looking at them, and there was this one where, like, this kid back in high school had, like, stolen stuff out of my car. And when I went to go, like, confront him this one night after, like, a long night, and, like, thought I was tough and got my ass kicked. And I was, like, super resentful about it still. Like, if I brought his name up, I'd still get just as mad today as I did 10 years ago. And when that was the thing, like, Pat was like, hey, man, like, when did this happen? And I was like, how old were you? And I was like, oh, 18. He's like, all right, so you've been carrying this around for 10 years. And I was like, shit, like, I have been carrying it around for 10 years. And he said to me, like, what do you want? Like, what do you want? You want to know, like, you were right? You want him to tell you, like, you were right and he was wrong? And I was like, dude, like, and then it just kind of went away. You know what I mean? It was crazy. Like, once I, like, got a look at it, like, this thing I've been harboring for so long, it was, like, so angry about, like, who cares? Like, you know what I mean? Also, there was also a part of the book where it talks about the throne of judgment. I do that a lot. Like, there's a lot of things that I judge other people for that if I take a deep look, I do myself. And I notice that normally when I feel, like, very judgmental towards somebody or don't like the way somebody's acting or something they're doing, if I, like, take a good look, I exhibit that same behavior. You know what I mean? So that was a good eye-opener on that one. And when we made amends, Actually, the first time I went through with Matt, I had to make amends to that girl. Her name was Mariah, and I was, like, insane when we were dating her. Like, I cheated on her, like, insanely. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It was bad. It was very bad. If anybody ever did to me what I did to her, I don't know if I'd ever get over it. And I had to go make amends to her, and it was very hard. And it was, like, the scariest thing I've ever done. Like, I went to her home group because I knew she'd be there to try to approach her to make the amends. And I was, like, seriously, like, about to throw up. And my heart was racing, and I'm calling my sponsor to try to get out of it. Like, ah, dude, I don't know. It looks crowded. I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all kinds of, like, anything. Like, I was so feared up to go meet this girl, like, one-on-one. And because I hadn't talked to her in, like, 2 years. And I didn't know how she was going to react. You know what I mean? I didn't know she was going to tell me to get lost or what. And I didn't know how she felt. But, you know, he was, like, very stern about get in there and get it done. You know what I mean? Like, this is what we do. We make an effort to go make the amends. So I did. And I couldn't believe how well it went. Like, I asked her, like, can I make the amends? Like, I feel like, you know, I've caused harm in the past, and I'd like to, you know, do what I can to try to make it right, or at least acknowledge my wrongs in it, you know? And she was very forgiving, and, you know, it felt like a real weight was lifted off my shoulders, because, you know, like, I knew I screwed this girl's life up. Like, I knew I did. It'd be impossible to ignore that. And it also kind of happened at the right time, too. You know, I feel like if I had tried to go on any earlier or whatever, it might not have had the same effect. And that's another thing, like, my relationship with God these days is, it's like getting much stronger. You know what I mean? Having gone through the steps and also just having like some experience with it. It's, when I take a look at my life and I see the way things worked out and the way people have been positioned in them, I personally feel it would be very ignorant of me to not like kind of understand where it's coming from. Because there's a lot of things that, just like with the sponsor thing, like when I don't get my way, it's usually not the worst thing in the world. It's usually for the best in the end. And it might not make sense in the moment, but eventually it all comes together and makes sense. And I look at it like, wow, thank you, God, because you saved me where I was going to, you know, probably blow things up. And you know, I see the friends you put in my life and everything like that, and everybody that supports me. And so I try like that. You know, I seriously try to, like, you know, live by that third step prayer, like turning my will and my life over to God. And, you know, I pray for that every morning. And another, like, big example I had recently, here's the thing. I had recently gotten into a relationship, and, like, the girl's great. Like, she is. My girlfriend's great, but she's not like us, you know. She drinks. And her family is like the nicest people you'd ever meet, but when they get together, they like to drink. And in the beginning, this has only been going on for about 5 months, I guess. And in the beginning, like, I haven't been around alcohol in years at this point. And so, you know, I'm hanging, you know, I'm starting to meet her. I'm meeting her family and her friends and all that. And so she's asking me, like, you know, she's like, was drinking with her friends one night. This is in the very beginning. And she's saying, like, does this bother you? And, you know, it's all new and everything, and I haven't been in the situation, but I also, you know, I was like, oh, no, it doesn't bother me. You know what I mean? Like, go ahead. Like, I'm cool. Go for it. And it didn't last so long. You know what I mean? Like, it does bother me. And so I was, like, trying to put this front on, because then I realized, because at first I really didn't know what to expect. Like I said, I hadn't been in the situation. And so then, like, it was, like, every 2 weeks, like, she shares in a, like, this townhouse with her brother. And her brother, he, like, loves drinking and smoking weed, you know what I mean? Like, he loves it. And then, so one day, dude, it was brutal. We were, me and Jess, we're hanging out all day, right? And, like, everything's, like, cool. Like, we made dinner, like, everything was fine, like, we're chilling. And her brother comes home with a couple friends, and all of a sudden, I'm stuck in this basement, and they're just doing shots of Jack and ripping bongs, and I am crawling out of my skin. Like, I can't take it anymore. Also, at this time, I had fallen into this trap of where, like, I made my girlfriend my life. You know what I mean? It was, like, everything I had to, not consciously. I didn't mean to do it, and I didn't consciously do it. But you know, I looked and I was like, all right, you've been to like one meeting in the last 2 months. You know what I mean? You're not really like doing your step work or any of that shit stuff. And so I'm sitting there crawling out of my skin. And then she like, we go up to bed and like, I can't sleep. So eventually, like, I sat down. I was like, yo, listen, we need to have a talk. You know what I mean? And she was very understanding. I explained to her, like, and she doesn't get it. Like, she can't possibly get it. Like, I can't. I try to, like, get through to her, like, what's, like, what really is, like, my emotions and thoughts. But, like, I don't know if I don't convey it well, but, you know, she's very supportive of recovery and all that. And, like, things did change. Like, she understands now. Like, when there's, like, stuff going on, I told her, like, straight up, like, if this is, like, a part of your life that I'm not going to be a part of, you know what I mean? Like, when there's parties in the basement, like, I can't do it because I can't. I can't jeopardize my sobriety, you know what I mean? I got a little boy at home who possibly saved my life when he was born and got me into rehab, and it'd be very unfair to him and the rest of my family to, like, bring them back to the hell I put them through for so many years. So, you know, she's been supportive with that. But back to what I was saying about, I was thinking about this analogy, like, I feel like if you have, like, a plate of life, and you put all your chips in the middle, like, that should be, like, God, you know what I mean? And you kind of put a couple around of the other stuff you have to take care of. I had, like, moved all my chips into this girl sitting on the edge of the table. And naturally, because she's human, she, like, let me down eventually. And it wasn't anything big, trust me. Like, she didn't really even do anything wrong. But it upset me, you know what I mean? Like, it says, you know, real or fancied, it doesn't matter. And, like, the whole table went over and I, like, found myself, like, wanting to drink because all of a sudden alcohol didn't seem like the problem. It looked like the solution because of the amount of pain I was in, you know what I mean? And that was the first time in about 4 years that I actually wanted to drink, you know? Like, it wasn't just a thought. It was, like, I wanted to because I knew it would ease the pain. Like, the solution was in the bottle, you know what I mean? And it was scary. It was very scary because I don't know, man. I haven't drank in so long, and I know what happens once I do because, you know, I've learned that once I start, I can't stop. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, this thing I learned in AA, like, I have an allergy to alcohol. You know what I mean? And once I consume it, it gets lit up, and, like, there's nothing I can do. Like, I can't stop. I don't know how to stop. Yeah, so I talked to a bunch of people about it, and they kind of let me in on, like, what was going on with me and, like, you know, something's got to change was, like, the overall theme. So that was actually what led to the conversation that I had with her. But when I become blocked from God, I, like, become very miserable. You know, it's almost, and it happens from time to time. And a lot of times I have to look at, like, what have I been doing recently? You know what I mean? And if I haven't been doing the right thing, like, if I don't, I have a hard time remembering that I need to, like, keep up on this daily. And I do try to sometimes, like, think, like, okay, I prayed, I went to a meeting, I did that, and then, like, I think I'm okay for a little bit, but eventually I find myself blocked from God and in misery. And quite frankly, I would rather just be drunk than, like, sober and miserable. You know what I mean? Because it feels, like, very lonely, and you know, it's just not a good place to be. Luckily, through the step work and everything like that, and also, I've been able to form a closer relationship with God. And there was one thing that was happening a few weeks ago, and this was huge for me because it, like, brought a big trust in the God that I was just having. Like, my ego was, like, going nuts, and it was latching on to, like, these thoughts that, like, I didn't even want in my head, but they just, like, kept coming. And people told me, like, pray for God to remove them. And honest to God, in the moment, it felt silly because I didn't see how that was possibly going to happen. But, like, I was in so much pain, I was, like, willing to do anything. So I, like, prayed super hard, like, God, please remove this, you know, remove my defects from me. Let me detach from my ego and allow me to just, like, live free, you know. And it happened. You know, I swear to God, it happened. Like, and it was a big, it made me, like, really trust God in that moment because, like, I felt free the next day, you know. So I try to keep that in mind whenever I get, you know, a little bit out of it or feel blocked off from God. Another gift that I've gotten out of AA, I've actually been able to sponsor people, and I got two guys that I sponsor now, and they've been flourishing, and I feel, like, very blessed to have had these two because the one I kind of got set up with, and we started going through the steps, and, like, I could see the difference in them. You know what I mean? Like when I first met them, everything was like very grim and like not good. And as time evolved and as we went through the step work and we went through the book, I could see his whole mindset change, you know? And I could see him getting better and see that light coming in from like the inside out. And as he started to trust in God and his, you know, getting to take him through the four step and going through things and pointing out and seeing him really, you know, just start to get it. And he told me how he, you know, he went and made amends to his mother who he had, you know, done a lot of harm to. You know, as like we all have, I think, you know, we harm the ones closest to us. And hearing him being able to go back and kind of acknowledge what he had done wrong and see it from like his point of view. Because I'd never been asked to sponsor anybody up until about 5 months ago, I guess. And it really is an experience, you know. And the other kid, too, he's doing just as well. Everybody's doing, you know, they're, like, doing what I asked them. And I feel very blessed because I know, like, you know, not everybody gets it, you know what I mean? So to see them stick it out and keep moving forward, it's been a real, real blessing in my life. And they helped me out, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little early, but honestly, I think that's about all I got. So, thank you for having me out. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Ant.
Yeah, Bill's going to say something.
Cool. What? We got a little more time left. Bill, you want to get in up here?
I think you're serious.
My name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bill.
What's up, guys? Yeah, just to add to what, you know, Ant said. So, Ant's been a good friend of mine, since I first came into the rooms. And, you know, I don't know. one of the big things for me, you know, in my journey through recovery so far has been the fellowship aspect of things, you know. when I came in here, I didn't have two nickels to rub together. I didn't have a single meaningful relationship left in my life. You know what I mean? I came in extremely, extremely lonely. Just disconnected from everybody, everything, God, other human beings, life in general, you know? And I think, you know, for me, at the end of the day, like, that's what we're all looking for, you know, connection, right? So, one of the first ways I found that was through some friends I had met in here. And, you know, I'll never forget, like, the first examples of what, you know, recovery and friendship and meaningful relationships are supposed to be about were shown to me through other people, through people who were in the rooms just like myself, who had just as much clean time, sober time as myself, which at the time wasn't much at all. You know, I came in and I had just gotten out of jail. Again, I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any money. I had a negative bank account balance. I didn't have any cigarettes. You know, I had nothing. I didn't even have a cell phone. I was a loser in every sense of the word. And, you know, for no other reason than, you know, I guess Aunt wanted a friend too. We were fortunate enough to cross paths in an outpatient facility and started going to meetings together. And honestly, that's been, to this day, you know, one of the biggest blessings in my life. It really has, you know, and saved my butt time and time again throughout the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it's not only a testament to, you know, to his character, but it's a testament to what I think we're all trying to do in here, you know, become whole, selfless human beings. And to a large degree, you know, Ant seemed to have that down pretty well on day one. So I'm forever grateful for that lesson that I, you know, that I was given from him early on in this process. And, you know, since that time, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, let that friendship blossom and grow tremendously and reach out and branch out into friendships with a whole host of guys. You know, there are at least a dozen guys in this room right now who I have, you know, pretty close relationships with. And again, for a guy who came in here with absolutely nothing, no one to talk to, and just feeling completely isolated and alone, you know, that's a big deal to me. You know, as a young kid in his 20s trying to get sober and trying to change, you know, my way of life completely, that was a big concern for me early on. You know, where am I going to meet people? How am I going to have friends? How am I ever going to have fun again? Honestly, you know, after a series of arrests and constantly disappointing my family and just feeling like a loser every day, all day, and just in a constant state of misery, depression, and discontentment, to not get arrested anymore would have been like pretty good enough. I would have felt like pretty good with that. And honestly, that was like the extent of my ambition when I first got in here. I thought that was like as good as it was going to get. I'd live this like kind of straight line, toe in the line, kind of boring, you know, Quaker, forgive me, Quaker town, but Quaker like existence. And I just thought it was going to suck. I thought it was going to be really boring. But come to find out that, man, you know, holy smokes, man, I've had more fun in the last 5 or 6 years than I ever did in my active drinking and using days. You know, that real genuine laughter from the pit of my stomach, you know, that language of the heart, actually building relationships with people by opening up about what's going on in my life. And come to find out all these things that I think I'm, you know, terminally unique and I'm, you know, nobody knows how I feel. That's how I felt when I came in here. But now, you know, I've come to find out that time and time again, there is no unique emotion under the sun, you know. All of us feel the same pains and the same joys in life. And that's what's beautiful about, you know, that particular aspect of this fellowship. You know, it's a beautiful thing, man. So I've been fortunate to get, you know, intimately involved with a bunch of these guys and get to know them on a really, really deep level, better than, you know, any relationship that I had prior to coming in here. And, you know, to speak a little bit more on Matt over here, you know, I the only thing he hates when I talk about him, and I'm not going to say much, but, you know, I had been sober for 3 years, and, you know, doing my thing and having fun in the fellowship and going to meetings, and me and all my buddies that I had, you know, made friends with, we were getting it. We were going to meetings, we were having a good time, and life was really coming together for us. And this whole time, you know, my brother was still struggling and couldn't find his way. He just couldn't seem to get it. And we tried every which way, you know. We tried tough love, we tried soft love, you know, we tried just letting him do his thing, whatever. But I was convinced every single day that we were going to be playing this kid in the ground one day. And, you know, thanks to nothing that I did, just letting go of that situation and putting it in the hands of God, you know, eventually he has his own story to tell. But I'll just say that I saw a remarkable turnaround in him as a human being. You know, I watched him go from a complete skeleton shell of a human being through God and the love of people in this fellowship to a fully functioning, articulate, eloquently spoken individual with light in his eyes. And for me, that was my real introduction to God. You know, it really was, because in my mind, he was as hopeless gets. And, you know, now on a day-to-day basis, you know, I very much look up to him, and it's an incredible thing to witness, man. And that's not a unique story. You know, that's happened for a lot of people I know. And, I don't know. It's a crazy thing. This whole program is, it's a really, really crazy thing. It's a beautiful gift that, you know, I think I've been given, that we've all been given, to get in here and actually connect with one another on a deep level and talk spirituality or just, you know, bitch and complain about what's going on throughout the day, whatever. But, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, we all come in here with the same goal. And that's not only to stay sober, but to live like a happy, content life in here. So, I don't know. At this point, I feel like I'm just rambling, but I was asked to speak for a few minutes. So, I don't know. I'm just grateful to be here. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks, Bill.
about 10 minutes left, so Heather's going to get up and finish us off.
My name's Heather. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Heather.
I haven't stood at this podium since a couple years ago, and a lot's happened in a couple years. Thank you for speaking. It was phenomenal. I always enjoy hearing speakers I've never heard, and you hit on a lot of beautiful things. The gifts of this program, you know, and it's not always materialistic, but emotionally, mentally, spiritually. You know, it's been a crazy couple years for me, and I'm coming up on 4 years again. And the reflection of 4 years is beautiful. Not always everything is easy, but it's always worth it. And that's one thing I've come to realize is it's always worth it. In the last couple years, you know, so much has happened. I've switched sponsors. I've had different sponsees. I went through a brain tumor. I've been in car accidents. I've dealt with death. And, like, I've never found one reason to pick up an alcoholic drink or any other substance for that matter. And, you know, I couldn't do it without the people sitting in this room, without God, without a sponsor, sponsees. And, like, they always say that sponsees save your ass. And, boy, do they save you more than they know. You know, just this past month I've been struggling, job and impulse decisions, and you know, like, I always have this, like, unrealistic expectation of I should know what I'm doing by now, you know, and, like, I still don't know what I'm doing, and I probably 10 years from now won't know what I'm doing either, but, like, if I follow the steps on the wall and the traditions and the concepts, like, I can't go wrong. You know, someone always taught me the only thing you can't do is do the right thing. You know, nothing can go wrong when you do the right thing. You know, so, my life's pretty darn good today. And, you know, I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom has 31 years and she just celebrated 31 years. And that's a huge gift, to have a sober mom. And, I never used to think I was grateful for it because she used to drag me to meetings and I'd sit in the back and I'd color pictures. And then, like, that was my life, you know, and I didn't understand why my mom went to AA. And I just knew that my mom was different and my dad wasn't around. And like, that's what she had to do to make sure she got to meetings. And today I do the same thing. You know, if I'm in a rut, I make sure that I get out of work because I can definitely get involved in work too much because I'm an alcoholic, and I'll find whatever feels good. And if it's working 14 hours a day, if it's driving halfway across the country to go see friends, you know, like, whatever feels good, I'll do it. And if I don't know what I'm doing, I realize that, like, I need to get one with God because I can definitely get away from my relationship with God if I'm not doing the next right thing. And that's a huge thing, is just to do the next right thing. You know, so today I have two sponsees, one who lives halfway across the world, like I talked about, and one who lives pretty local. And, you know, just like Bill was saying, one of them was saying, I don't know, one of y'all were saying, you know, like, it's so crazy to watch someone come in so broken, and, like, watch them get a little bit of light in their eye again. And, you know, like, just this week I bought a brand new car, I had two job interviews, and then today my job offers me a pay raise and a promotion, and I'm just like, okay, God, I see you. You know what I mean? And like, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know. It's crazy. Like, I was definitely trying to leave my job, like, 4 days ago. And, like, now I'm like, I still want to leave. But, like, I don't know. Everything works out the way God wants it to work out if I just step out of the driver's seat. And a couple of days ago, my brother called me and, like, invited me over. And for the last 8 years of my life, I worked on a relationship trying to see my brother. Not even, like, talk to him all the time, but, like, let me into your house and, like, have dinner with you or go out with me. And, like, my brother wanted nothing to do with me. And a couple of days ago, he called me and he goes, hey, you want to go out for dinner? Like, just randomly out of the blue. And like, that's all little small gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not, like, that I bought a brand new car or that I have a good job. You know, it's the fact that my brother, who once told me I was the reason our family wasn't together anymore, invited me into his home and allowed me to share some of the stuff that I've been going through. And, you know, and, like, last weekend I was in Memphis and, you know, I got to, like, hang out with 1,000 of my friends. Like, holy crap, I don't even realize I know that many people until I'm, like, I'm with them. And, like, You know, I got to hit the book again this weekend with my sponsor. And unfortunately, he lives in Texas, so I don't get to see him too much. But, like, AA does for me what I could never do for myself, you know, and God does for me what I could never do for myself. And like I said, it's not about the materialistic, like, do I hate coming from work to come to a meeting all the time? Absolutely. Would I rather stay at home and lay on my couch and, like, watch TV and do nothing? 100%. But Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that I need to show up, not for myself all the time, but to watch that newcomer come through the door, because you don't know who's going to walk through that door. And I know that there was a whole slew of people waiting for me to come in that door. And as a, you know, member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what I signed up for, to make sure that I'm here for the next suffering alcoholic that walks through the door who wants help. And I don't know, I actually don't really have much else to say, but we're almost to the end, so good job, all of you.